welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Yes. Woof, woof. Thank you, and the music is now fading. It's an interesting mystery. Well, all right. Interesting confusion. I'm hearing my feedback. All right, here we go. Let's do that again. Welcome, allies, the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context. Calling allies and Berkeley to... All right, let's try this. Maybe we're straightened out now. All right, let's pray. All right, as Wendell Berry says, be jaunty even though informed, and that is one of the themes of our show. We know we are electing flora fauna. It's flora fauna 2016. We are inaugurating our guiding story. So more than perfectly, our guest today for the first half hour, because he is so influential and busy in a good way, and we're happy for that, is Josh Fox. I don't know how many of you saw his testimony before the Democratic Platform Committee, but he was so prepared, oh my God, and full of did you know things that we all need to know in order to be that prepared. So Josh Fox is one of our best informed, increasingly influential defenders of life, banning fracking, protecting our beautiful commonwealth. He's one of Bernie's allies appointed to the Democratic Platform Committee, creator and director of Gasland and Gasland 2. We hosted him when the first movie came out, and I met his mother at the Congress for the Women's Congress for Future Generations in Moab, Utah. His presenting testimony was just so impressive. He stresses that fracking cannot be regulated and is a step backwards, trading coal for gas, not a bridge to clean energy, but a gangplank. So welcome, Josh Fox.
Hey, thanks so much. I'm happy to be on the show.
I'm delighted. And also, we should direct people to your wonderful movie, How to Let Go of the World and Love All Things That Climate Can't Change. How do people see your movie? I know HBO just screened it.
HBO is the big distributor right now. HBO has been fantastic for us in terms of putting on both Gasland and Gasland Part 2 and this film, basically the whole trilogy. And, you know, they've been very supportive. And right now, we have finished our grassroots tour for the moment. We toured to 66 cities around America in about 3 months. It was quite a breakneck and intense tour. But now, the movie's on HBO, HBO On Demand, HBO Go, and HBO Now. And what's great about that is there's a free trial happening right now. Wow. So you can get it for free. We also will do community screenings if there are people out there who want to host a screening, like rent their church or a Grange Hall or a community center, show the film to 100 of their closest friends. Please write to us at our website, which is howtoletgomovie.com, and we can process that screening for you. But the movie right now, because of the free trial, is virtually universally available. You just have to go on hbonow.com, I think it is, and sign up, and you can watch it anytime.
So, you know, a lot of the movie certainly is, well, be jaunty, even though fully informed, as Wendell Berry says. And I guess what we've been pitching on the show recently is like, all right, Bernie not going away. We're electing a guiding story. Whoever supports the story, they'll get our support. That's pretty clear. So you're heading to Philadelphia, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. In fact, before I go to Philadelphia, I'm going to Orlando, because there is the next round of this platform negotiation that happened before Philly. So when I testified, as you mentioned, which is up at my Facebook page, the testimony there, I testified for the committee hearings in Phoenix via Skype, so that was taped, and that was in front of the platform committee that included Dr. Cornel West, the brilliant Dr. Cornel West, and Bill McKibben, and they had a rough time out there. There were, you know, outvoted 7-6 as Sanders delegates, outvoted by the Clinton delegates on some of the most important aspects of the environmental platform, namely a ban fracking amendment. sent to the Democratic National Committee. We need that. We need a carbon tax. They were outvoted on that one. We need to stop TPP. They were outvoted on that one. And there's a keep it in the ground amendment, which has to do with not drilling the United States into Swiss cheese and keeping a lot of carbon in the ground. They were outvoted on that. So the Clinton delegates torpedoed basically the entire active Sanders environmental agenda. And since I've been appointed to the next level of these negotiations from New York State, from the Sanders Committee, it's going to be my job to make sure that we argue for a fracking ban, and argue for all of these elements that are so important when we're talking about the environment at the hearing. After that, there is the DNC, and as a member of the New York Platform Committee, I get to go, and we get to try to influence delegates there about continuing negotiations about the platform and their votes and so on.
And I don't suppose you're going to Cleveland just to witness the underworld strangeness of it all.
No.
I'm going there on your behalf. I'm going to both as part of Pacifica and Sirius Radio's press team. We'll smuggle things in there, and we go, oh, that's right. But might we say that part of your movie is, you know, how do we ride grief to greater dedication? Is that a fair thing to say?
Wow, that's a really wonderful way to say something. I think my take on it is slightly different, which is that we don't ride it, we punch through it. We punch through the catharsis of our emotions. And often I think when we deal with climate change, and this is a film, I should just preface it by saying that, you know, it starts in the Upper Delaware River Basin when we get our fracking ban, when we win. We win against the frackers in the Upper Delaware River Basin, and it's an incredible victory. And then I realized very quickly that we can beat the frackers in our own backyard but lose everything that we love to climate change. And that realization comes when I see that all of a sudden I look up and realize that all of the hemlock trees are dying. And hemlocks are the keystone species in the East. They're the most important trees. The whole forest sort of grows around them. And there's a parasite called the woolly adelgid, which is eating them up from Virginia all the way up to Maine, advancing north every year with a warming climate. And right after that realization happens, New York City gets slammed into by Hurricane Sandy. And it is the 1-2 punch that puts me back out on the road and says, you know, I have to go to investigate climate change. Quickly figuring out that we are way too late to stop so many of the things that we think about as the most negative consequences of climate change. And there is a part of the movie in the first 20 minutes, half an hour, where you just hit a wall at 100 miles an hour, and the movie basically just stops and says, oh my God, you know, what do we do now? And so it's a belief that I have coming from the theater in the healing power, the transformative power, the motivational power of catharsis. And catharsis is, you know, is the welcome emotion at the moment of revelation. Catharsis is what happens when you hear your favorite song on the radio and you start to cry. It's not a negative feeling. It's a positive type of feeling because you're owning the moment that we are alive in at that moment. And I think emotions are funny. You know, we spend a lot of time trying to avoid them, especially when we talk about climate. We avoid grief, we avoid depression, we avoid anger, we avoid sadness. Let me just revise, not depression. Depression is not an emotion. Depression is the absence of emotion. And when we deny things and we push them down, then we get depressed. We don't feel the emotion. We say, well, we're going to shelve this. I'm not going to look at it. And all of a sudden you're in this denial and this avoidance and you get depressed because you're not feeling things. When you allow yourself to feel things, all emotions are one wheel. You know, sadness, the greatest sadness has a little tiny bit of joy in there somewhere, and the greatest joy has a tiny little bit of sadness. I don't know why that's the case, but it is true. And I think that what we're encouraging people to do in the first half of this movie, for sure, the whole movie, is really feel it. Let yourself feel it. Go through it. It's an emotional roller coaster. And when the way the film is structured, that you can't really avoid it because the episodes are so thrilling and crazy and scary and deep and sad and angering. But the idea here is don't let being overwhelmed make you depressed. Get the feelings. The feelings allow us to understand what we need to do. And that is the gift of the people in the movie who instruct me and teach me. And the second half of the film becomes all about how do we start working with a new sense of values, a new sense of, and that is re-energizing, I believe. And we've watched audiences get energized by this film across the nation on our tour. The film begins and ends with a dance sequence, and we never have shown the film in public without having people dance in the aisles at the end of the movie.
No, well said. You know, we might say poignancy, grief, our kinship, and I remember going to the TEDx conference after the Gulf ecocide, and we do want to keep using that word. And this part of the breakthrough, part of the kind of divination tarot card, is all the scientists were weeping, right? They were weeping because they acknowledge they love what they study, you know, and I want to go through many of the creative hijinks. You know, we're re-wedding activism and animism. So many of the beautiful people from the Amazon and Ecuador and so on, we're saying we are descendants of the jaguar. You know, we are, and so many effective environmentalists. You know, Maxima Acuna, small, tiny, wonderful Peruvian woman. I'll honor her more in the second half. You know, because I want to get all the good out of you here in the first half. With cultural hijinks as well, I like you and Bill McKibben saying, let's rename the hurricanes. Why call them Sandy? They should be called Exxon. And Exxon laid devastating waste, you know, right, which I think is a really good idea. I mean, we can do that. I mean,
it's Bill's idea, but he's so brilliant. You know, Bill McKibben is one of the most brilliant people we have at really understanding how to frame this question over and over again in ways that are both pithy and that we can understand and that are meaningful. I'm grateful to his genius. I'm really happy that he's in the film there. And of course, you know, in the middle of our interview, very fittingly, we get kicked out of the Ronald Reagan International Trade Building in the food court where we're having our interview there. Even though it's closed, we get kicked out by security who say, you can't film in here. And it's really funny because we're like, well, where do we go? And they say, well, it's a free country. It's a free country everywhere except in the food court of the Ronald Reagan International Trade Building, I guess, tonight. So it's a very incredible, important moment in the film, and Bill McKibben has taught us all over the years, and he's taught me quite a lot of things, and I'm very grateful that he's in the film.
No, that's great, and he is so effective. I don't want to be in any way grumpy about him, but every now and then I go, you know, fight. Well, you do this too. We're going to fight for the future. We're going to fight this thing, and Bill, we're going to fight global. And I go, okay, all right. You know, fight is a hot word. You know, it does create a cascade of testosterone. But we just want many options. But that's off to one side. I'll take that back. And then you go through your great allies, but in a way, so much of what you captured on film, there's the being kicked out of the, you know, filming in the food court of the Ronald Reagan building. That's where the Goldman Awards are held. Curious. It's kind of that live action. Then we go to there you are in the waters off of Australia in the hand carved canoes with the Maori people and the Greenpeace boat, and you're trying to, well, just set it up for us, because then your camera almost goes into the water.
Well, like I said, the second half of the film is really about us really going all over the world and understanding, you know, what the climate fight is now, and how do we repair ourselves, and how do we move forward. And, you know, the emphasis is on a different civic virtue each place we go. So when I go to visit with the Pacific Climate Warriors, they're in Australia. These are members of 12 different Pacific Island nations who have decided to make a stand by blockading Australian coal ships that are, the size of the Empire State Building, with hand-carved traditional canoes from their homelands. So you've got seven of these hand-carved, beautiful canoes paddled by people from Tokelau and Samoa and Fiji and Tonga and Tuvalu, all these islands that will go underwater if we don't stop burning coal, stop burning oil, stop burning gas. And joined by, I would say, probably 150 different Thai activists from from Australia, and we go out to blockade the coal ships, and it is a real battle scene. And we really get, we're out there on the ocean, and you know the downside is getting eaten by a shark or swept out to the Pacific Ocean or underneath a tugboat or all of that to getting arrested by the police, and it is quite a spine tingling and spine chilling scene. And there are some things in it that I won't give away that are spoilers about how we survive the confrontation, which could have like destroyed all of our footage. There's a couple of times in the movie where the footage could just have been completely destroyed.
Yeah, no. I think you are an agent of Trickster, and Trickster's watching out for you. Against all odds, is the odds that Trickster likes. But I don't think it's a spoiler. You can stop me mid sentence if it is. But the boat does get capsized intentionally by the Dementors. You toss the camera. It's still filming while it's being tossed. And then you do have your teammates, weeping over the beautiful broken ship and what the broken handcar canoe and what it represents for a moment, and the coal boat leaving. But so there is the grief, and then back up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
well, you know, there is the civic virtue that we put on display there in that section of the film is resilience.
Right.
And it is about, you know, getting through the hardship and getting through the things that are tough and bouncing back and just never, ever, ever quitting. And it's remarkable to see that when you have people who are facing the loss of their islands, when you have people who are facing the loss of their homelands, almost certain loss of their homelands, and they're out there to fight for themselves and to fight for everybody else.
Yeah. And
it's remarkable to see.
It is, and heartening, and again, so many of the powerful allies, you know, do feel connected with the force of nature, which they love. You know, it is why I like saying, you know, reuniting activism with animism, meaning to cahoot with nature's guiding genius, that things happen, you get plucked out of the thing, the camera's still filming, there's the force of the jaguar, I just remember Maxima Acuna singing her song, you know, I sing to the mountains that I love that give me strength, and they give me strength to protect them. I sing to the lagoons that give me strength and my life, and they give me strength to protect them. And she did. I don't know if you know her story, but she won against this Colorado, gold mining company that was going to destroy everything, against, you know, police and corporate things and everything. And then finally she gets lawyers, and it's a longer story, but she does prevail. And there's again resilience, but she says that she felt that she drew strength from what she loved, right? That it was going to help her to be whatever we love loves us, and we form these alliances.
That's the key, right?
Yeah.
The key with the movement is that you must do what you love.
Right.
You can't do, I mean, like, if I had gone into this, if I had decided that I was going to, you know, heed the call work on this, and I decided that I was going to try to be an organizer, you know, I'm probably the most disorganized person on the planet. You know, like, I would have quit in about 3 weeks, and I wouldn't have been any good to myself or to the movement or anything. But when I walked in as a filmmaker, here I am 8 years later, 3 movies later, several short films later, you know, I'm still doing what I love, and it's helping because I love it. And that's what the movement requires you to do, actually. We do all sorts of things that we hate. And those things that we do that we hate are part of what oppresses us, right? It's part of this system that has built a climate that's out of control, right? Bernie Sanders made this amazing speech in New York the other day, and he said, how many of us would stop doing the job that we hate to do if we had universal health care? Because we only do the job because of our health care. How much creativity and entrepreneurship in America would be unleashed by the fact that you have all these people who wouldn't have to do what they hate anymore just because they have health care? at that job. It's a remarkable thing to think about. Now, so if you hate doing it, don't do it. The movement needs you to break those boundaries. The movement needs you to do what you love. And, of course, on the other side of that is to do the thing that's selfless, right? You have to show up at the protest. You have to show up at the civil disobedience action. You must show up at the rally. You must show up when the masses are calling upon you to be in the streets. So on the one hand, you must do and give the thing that you love the most as a part of yourself, because that's the way to we actualize the energy of people on the planet. At the same time, when it comes time to really take a stand, we take a stand and you show up. Like, I'm calling on people to show up in Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention. We are looking into figuring out how we can show the film in Philly during the convention. I'm going to be inside the convention. There's going to be all sorts of protests going on outside the convention. There is one on July 24th, the day before the convention, called the Clean Energy March. I will be marching. There's also a rally for Bernie Sanders right after. So it's important that people stick around for that, because I think I probably will be speaking at that rally. And there's a lot of us amazing people who are working, a lot of amazing people who are working on the Bernie Sanders campaign, who are also working on the environment. So, you know, there's a lot going on. And the first step in all of this activism, the way you know that you're on the right track, is that you've left your house. You don't click on a link. You don't deal with this in that kind of a stationary way. You leave your house. Leaving your house is the first step towards climate activism. Or you're having people over to your house, right? But, like, honestly, it's about getting out of doors, about breaking boundaries. It's about making sure that you're active and alive and awake. And that is the way that we fight climate change. We can't do it alone. We can't. It's not like click on a petition or sign this document and all or like this post and all of a sudden everything going to be okay. We are so far beyond that. It's not even about getting your own solar panels or going vegetarian by yourself. There's so many people who are like, oh, well, I'm a vegetarian and I have solar panels and I drive a Tesla, so I'm so great. Well, yeah, okay, but an individual-based solution to climate change will not work. So if you want to get solar panels, absolutely you must. If you want to get to go vegetarian, absolutely you must. But don't shame other people, and make sure that as you do that work, you're opening it up to become a community that gets off of solar, or a community that eats less meat, or a community that's revamping the whole power system in the town. That's going to be real climate action. The rest of it is patting yourself on the back, which is fine. We need to pat ourselves on the back sometimes, but we need climate action. You know, climate action is a team sport. So we have to reach out and get beyond our comfort zone and start working as communities, not just as individuals. Individualism is part of the problem.
Right. It's like I was at a, you know, an interesting entheogenic gathering, and I brought up, you know, climate change, and everybody, all these hip burner people were like, no, no politics. And I go, really? Are we henna and a honkies in a hot tub? What's going on here? Come on, every rousing thing. personal salvation, I got mine. No, it is exactly a rousing call, and I guess, you know, inner dedication unfurls the outward path. So, so the rally in Philadelphia on July 24th, you'll be there.
Yeah. It's also my birthday, by the way.
Oh, congratulations.
July 24th, so yes. Everyone can come to my birthday party.
So you're
just talked about it's all about me.
That's right. But you are Leo. You are Shulman. You're producer. You are the Death and Resurrection show. You are the maker of The Invisible Visible. Because you know the word obscene is a Greek stage direction. It means off stage, right?
I didn't know that.
Obscene. So, yeah, when Medea murders her children, the stage direction is obscene. So illuminating the obscene is part of your great dynamic that, you know, let's peel back the curtain and illuminate it, you know, and... Mm-hmm. And that's why I think also for all of us to be effective, did you know? See, because as we want everybody. We want everybody. Come on over from the thing that's going down to the thing that's coming up, you know, this Renaissance story. And a friend of mine, when I was being ineffective, said, nobody minds being asked, did you know? You know, did you know? And there's so much. I want to start you off on this in our waning precious moments with you. You know, did you know that a quarter of the mammals are actually it's more than that, isn't it? It's 50% of the mammals. All our moist-eyed beings. Did you know that 50% of the mammals could, and we're locked in. I mean, we're locked into another. To 1.5 degrees, right? rise in global temperature. So anyway, you want to fill us up. I know the first half of the movie is full of that. You know, Lester Brown going the 3-foot rise of sea level. There goes the East Coast as a beginning. And then he says, this is just, you know, much more. And the maps are useful, going, everybody see your little map, going, ooh-hoo-hoo. The species are migrating. You go into Syria, all those things, ocean acidification, destruction of coral, the forests of the West. So there's nowhere to go to not protect something, right?
Well, I mean, honestly, we get the question all the time, and
what question?
The question: where do I go? Where do I move when everything starts to go really bad? And I'll just quote Bill McKibben. Bill McKibben's answer is the same every time. He says New Zealand. No, I'm kidding.
No.
He says anywhere that there's a strong community.
Oh, okay.
That's so where do you go? Mm-hmm. There's two places where I think you go. Mm-hmm. One is outward towards your community. Make sure that your community is starting to talk to each other. You know, when fracking first came to my backyard, I didn't know my neighbors. I knew maybe a couple of them, right? Now that our community has been through this fight to fight off the fracking companies and win, I know all of my neighbors, and they're great relationships, you know? And that I wouldn't trade for anything. So you must go out to your community, and that's where you move. You move out because we all think we live somewhere, but actually where we live is just in our house. It doesn't really matter where our house is. Unless you have connections to your community, you're living basically anywhere on earth. It doesn't matter. So what you have to do is live the place you live and meet the people you live near and work with them and become close with them. And that's a big piece of it, right? The second piece of it is you got to go about 6 inches inside of your own skull. You have to pull on what's happening internally. You have to say, all right, what am I made of? What are the things that climate can't change that are inside of me? What am I going to encourage? Am I going to encourage my worst impulses, panic, violence, judgment, anxiety, or am I going to encourage the best impulses in me, you know, generosity, bravery, courage, creativity, love? And similarly, that goes for society, right? Are we going to encourage in our society the things that have brought us to this place, which are greed and competition and violence and racism and fossil fuels? Or are we going to go in our society and encourage the things that climate can't change that will help us get through the climate catastrophe with a sense of human dignity? That's, you know, community, resilience, courage, human rights, democracy, renewable energy, sustainable values, generosity, all of these things. And that's what the film ends up being about. That's why it's called How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change.
And again, in our waning precious moments before you go forth and are ever increasingly influential, we like to bless our guests as well. What blessing would you like from our dedicated listeners?
Well, that's a very nice question. You know, for me, I just want to stay awake. There's a lot of people who are right now very upset about what's going on in the political situation, and I agree.
Yeah.
We've had a stolen election. We have the greatest political movement on the ground that I've ever seen in the United States, with all the movements combined, right? The climate change movement, the anti-fracking movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, the labor movement, the fight for 15, Idle No More, the fight to stop rape against campus, on campus, the immigration movement, the feminist movement, the LGBTQ movement. I mean, I could go on and on and on about how America is out in the streets right now. A lot of those movements are combining in this movement for the political revolution initiated by Bernie Sanders. And a lot of us are trying to figure out what to do now, because Hillary Clinton is going to be really, really bad for us for the climate, really, really bad for us from the standpoint of fracking. And Donald Trump is, you know, everybody's worst nightmare, and it's ridiculous. Donald Trump, by the way, becomes real the minute he has a running mate, right? Because he's such a buffoon that you almost don't take him seriously right now. But the minute he's got a running mate, now he's got Chris Christie. Now it's all of a sudden, oh, my God.
Does he?
I hate Chris Christie.
Wait, does he?
No, he doesn't.
Oh, okay.
It will happen pretty soon, right? I mean, the convention is only a couple of weeks. So, truthfully, though, we don't have any place to go as environmentalists with these two characters. They're oligarchs. They support fracking. It's a very, very bad situation. So the question is, what do we do? And a lot of people say, well, Bernie or bust. Oh, this and that and the other thing. And Green Party, well, I have to say, don't go to the Green Party. The Green Party are not If it was called the Brown Party, I wouldn't have any problem with it. The problem is the Green Party hasn't done any organizing on fracking, any organizing on climate, any organizing on Keystone, any organizing of building power, period. What worries me is that they're going to play spoilers in this election and get Donald Trump elected, and everyone's going to blame the environmental movement, which they are not actually a part of. They just crop up every 4 years to be candidates. So that's disturbing to me. Yep. But what I want to say is this. I pledge to stay awake, and I pledge to stay to work on the movement. And the movement is what actually changes things, right? We didn't elect leaders in New York State that wanted a fracking ban. That was not part of their platform. The movement made that happen. And in the same way, the movement has to make the next fracking ban happen. And the movement has to make keep it in the ground happen. And the movement has to make the carbon tax happen. And we do that by being strong and adamant and in the streets and working within the language of elections, of course, yes. But mostly within the agenda, tactics, and strategy of a movement. And those are voting with your feet. Those are showing up for the protest. Those are being on the front lines of civil disobedience, which is another one of the virtues that we extol in the film. That is what we have to focus on now. So I want to make sure that when times are very, very, very stormy in terms of politics, there's a tendency sometimes to panic and to run scared. What I would say to our movement is let's keep our power. Let's not say, oh, we're going to be shoved into this corner or that corner. We keep our power. We make our demands. We demand a ban on fracking. We demand a carbon tax. We demand a departure from fossil fuels. We demand that we don't incentivize frack gas power plants. These are our demands. We have to make them whoever's the president. We have to make them whoever's in whatever the platform is. And we have to continue to make them and not be scared because this is the way that we influence the dialogue.
Okay, I'm going to reluctantly release you out into ever greater global influence, although our teammates here and we have listeners in certainly Bay Area, hello, in Los Angeles and Japan, and also in Syria, people are listening, and all over the place, and we love you and your dedication, and we are kindling that in our hearts as well. Thank you so much, Josh.
Oh, thank you. And listen, I will be on the Lee Camp show tonight.
Oh, that's great.
Tonight, if you want to check that out.
Yes,
I'm on his show tonight. And just watch the movie. It's HBO Now, HBO Go, howtoletgomovie.com. There's a screening guide there if you want to have your own house party and talk about the issues with your friends. It's a great way to do it. There's a map of the United States where you can connect to local groups that we endorse around the country. Those are local climate groups or national climate groups like Climate Citizens. The Climate Lobby or 350.org or any of the amazing groups that exist out there from state to state. So I really appreciate being on your show today.
It's great.
Thanks for understanding that
of course.
We're in an incredibly busy cycle right now.
No, you're good. You're good. And I hosted Lee Camp on the show 2 weeks ago, so say hi to Lee.
I already taped it, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, you did. Okay, that's very good. Okay. Well, retroactively.
Listen, it's been a real pleasure, and thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Okay, this is Caroline Casey, Visionary Actors Show. That was our wonderful guest, Josh Fox, and we're going to have a very, very brief snippet of break music just for the fun of it. Here we go. Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. That was Papa Celestine, who was also our break music last week. Thank you, teammates, for reminding me of his greatness, his great name for that. So, yes, that was a change of pace from our incredibly organized, he said he wasn't organized, but he really is, a guest of the last half hour, Josh Fox, who had to dash off to be even more influential out there in the world because he is much in demand. That is really great. Urgent late breaking things, because we are rapid responders. Senators announced deal that bans state GMO labels. No. Into the cauldron, Monsanto. We're not going to let them win. It says call 866-772-3843 to call our senators. Yes. So Josh brought up so much, and it is before our council as crucial. We go back to Wendell Berry's quote, be jaunty even though informed. Yes, there we go. And I like, you know, that model of, you know, what I pitched to Josh, and he's like, oh, that's really good. We all have our different contributions. Let's ride grief to greater dedication. He goes, yeah. And then he also brought up the crucial theatrical nature of catharsis, where it's like the turning moment of way down. But our willingness to cahoot with nature's guiding genius, which we also known as trickster, the evolutionary ingenuity that likes against all odds. And Josh is on this, and many of the people in his film, you know, are part of this crucial dynamic that is before us all of re-wedding what has been falsely estranged as a mean trick of the reality police. So, you know, activism and animism. You know, for 20 years on the Visionary Activist Show, we've been dedicated to re-wedding activism with animism, and there was some left-wing resistance to this 20 years ago, going, oh, how do you talk about this gobbledygook, you know, when the world's on fire? And we go, yes, there are those who care so deeply about the world being on fire that they say we don't have time for, you know, animistic kinship with nature. And we go, that would be a colonized mind, because when we look to what's really effective, when we look to the Samoan and the Maori and the activists and the kayaktivists and in their beautiful carved canoes, you know, going dauntless against the large coal containing ship and all of that, they feel they are wedded to what they love with its backup. I love so much, you know, we know beautiful Berta Cáceres, who was a defender of so much that was beautiful, and that she was assassinated. And I love the indigenous women honoring her at the Goldman Environmental Awards, in which they said, Berta did not die, she multiplied. We go, yeah, those things that give us goosebumps, going, right, none of us going away, those of us who love the earth. And as Josh says, right, there are a lot of the proposals to the Democratic Platform Committee made by the Bernie delegates, of which Josh Fox is one, were voted down, but only by one vote. Only by one vote, if you look at it. Okay, so no on carbon tax by one vote. TPP, banning TPP, no, but it was pretty close. Keep it in the ground, no. Anti-fracking, no. And we go, oh yes, oh yes. It is a highly mutable, shape-shifting time right now, and that's why our willingness to cahoot with the power of what we love. Remember in the beautiful novel The Hummingbird's Daughter by Jose Urrea, also guest of show, this great moment that I love and keep in magic backpack all the time, in which wonderful Teresita, historically true medicine woman of Mexico, her Aztec step-granny is saying, feel your feet on the earth, and we can all do this now, even if driving, feel your feet on the earth and feel roots going down, down from your feet, way down deep into the earth. And Teresita says to her granny, does this mean I can't get hurt, Aztec grandmother? And her Aztec grandmother says, no, child, we all get hurt. It means you can't be overpowered. Okay, that's really important. That's a crucial dynamic. So, yes, let us say that, you know, this is part of the Renaissance School of Educational Collective Healing, you know, previously known as politics, the no-conflict Bernie realm. And part of, I think, what we want to address, you know, is no matter how natural to compost vitriolic hatred, because it's a con that sucks our chi. You know, I'm a member of every, you know, Bernie Facebook page there is, and not many are good, but many are going a little cuckoo, vitriolic, hyper-yang, Mars, turning to right-wing Breitbart, you know, to fuel their hatred. And we go, standards, standards team, standards. And I even just put a little comment going, whoa, compost, vitriol, standards, right? And the administrator took it down, right? And I go, oh, Lord, team, okay. So may we all be agents of, you know, calm, liberating response, and other things too, calm, liberating response in a hot, reactive world. And it's true, our great allies, you know, Josh Fox and Bill McKibben and and Bernie, right? The language is, you know, we're going to fight this and we're going to fight that and we're going to fight this thing and we're going to fight that thing. And we go, all right, okay, fair enough. They're boys. They love it. They're doing great good in the world. But I just want to pitch in, you know, what I mentioned to Josh, and he's like, whatever. Is that, you know, we know our brains are metaphoric, and that when we say fight, even for something good, there's a physiological cascade of hot, reactive testosterone that is released into our bodies going, fight! And I just encourage us all to, you know, the climate fight, and go, we're not going to fight climate, for God's sake. We're going to engage ingenuity of humans to cooperate with nature's guiding genius. I know it's a little long, but we can work on it to play, so all of us, everybody who brought what to this table, you know, cultivating our ever-expanding repertoire of responses so as to be liberating. There is a hot reactivity brewing, you know, as well. There were people on the Bernie pages going, oh, I'm an older guy, you know, and I believe in peace, but I'm willing to punch out people and villains. It's like, no, because that would be a con. It is crucial that we direct collective attention to the guiding story of sane reverence and, yes, outrage at craziness. And then over here we go, over there. You know, it's again, like, you know, again, example of, you know, the World Bank had built an expensive multi-million-dollar barbed wire wall around itself at some anti-World Bank, you know, protest. People are going, the wall, you know, and I and a couple of people stepped in and go, oh, thank you, World Bank, for building this expensive wall to protect us from you. Now, let us turn our backs to the wall and carry on, you know, direct attention with where we want it to go. There we go. So let us aspire to not be snookered into hot polarity, but to spiral out of it. You know, and that means many, many things, you know, again, that are in many of Josh's very beautiful film. And as he said, HBO has a free trial right now. You can watch his movie for free, the movie How to Let Go of the World and Love All Things That Climate Can't Change. We go, yeah. It is beautiful, and it is heartening, and it is inspiring, and it is moving, and we gotta know how horrible things are, absolutely. Did you know, with the allies in the film, Lester Brown, did you know a 3-foot, you know, rise of sea level, you know, there goes most of Philadelphia, there goes almost all of Florida, you know, these are all things in the work. The species are migrating, the mammals, that we might lose 50% of mammals. Well, it's going that way, you know, and everyone does need to know this, not to sink into despair or solipsistic, you know, self-absorbed melancholy. We go, melancholy transformed into yearning and aspirational cooperation by a flash of coyote lightning. You know, remember, the coyote trickster part of all of us, you know, hurls lightning at the closed circle loop, turning it into a liberating spiral. There we go. We're turning the circle of habit into a liberating spiral of reverent cooperation. May we all be agents of creative disruption in service to harmony. There we go. And the creative disruption is a good theme for many things. We snap out of the trance. Hey, over here, let us be many things that we, you know, every skill set that everyone has, you know, cultivated and dedicated now is so crucial and available. I love that as we began convening this hour with Josh Fox for the first half hour, what was rising in the East, the image for 17 plus Libra is, you know, placing men under arrest. And we go, well, that's good. We like accountability. Accountability. You know, as so many films, and also Josh's film, certainly, you know, he treks through the rainforest of the Amazon to find these, what used to be called spills, but spill is too gentle a word. Let's call it ecocide. And there are the people who love this place. And they go, oh, the possums, the monkeys, the birds, the trees, the plants, our wood, the medicinal plants, you know, all of this. It's not just humans, and then to the devastated areas going, oh, the sociopathic level of technological destruction, you know, before us is strong, not to have us go whaley again, but to have us connect again with what we love. It might be, we wonder, what is unique to our human species aside from our rudeness and sociopathic, impositional, murderous mayhem, of which Donald Trump is a monstrous cartoon and not in any way funny. Don't know what, if any of you have seen kind of latest his rantings, but you go, actually quite megalomaniacally crazy. Bad crazy, not good crazy. You know, the art of the deal, it can be a bad deal, it can be a horrific deal, it can be a whatever deal, it can be a deal. So very crazy, inviting the worst of humans to the fore. So us, as agents of sane, reverent renaissance rising from rubble, you know, our assignment is to invite the best out. Now, of everybody, we're inviting the best. Come on over here. Now, it's complex where we all are, you know. Some people from last week, I don't even remember being particularly grumpy about Hillary last week, were like, why do you hate Hillary? I'm like, hatred. Like, what? I think critique is important, and it is true that I have been composting conniption fits when thinking about Hillary going, but it was an interesting conversation I had with wonderful ally last night, also very Bernie, but we were going, all right, what is there good? Is there good we can encourage? And Hillary, I was talking about how Josh Fox was so prepared. I encourage everybody to go to his website or to my Facebook page, Coyote Network News, because posted as many places as possible, or you can just, you know, search for Josh Fox presenting to the Democratic National Platform Committee, because he only had, what, 7.5 minutes? He was so prepared. He was just, he said he wasn't organized. That was a very organized mind that was right on it. Very impressive. Carol Browner was impressed. Like, whoa. You couldn't not be impressed by the compelling lucidity and logic of his knowledge, his facts, and his guidance. It was very impressive. So this wonderful person I was talking with last night, who also has had conniption fits about Hillary, but she did say, Hillary likes well-prepared people. She does. And we go, is there any point? Is there a point? Sure. We, trickster, anything could happen. It's shape-shifty. But we just see Hillary listening to Josh Fox. You know, her backstage self just listening to Josh Fox. Just over there, if that's something you want to animate, good. And if not, that's fine, too. We'll move on. Everybody, autonomy. You know, we say, you know, everything right now, every radio show, every spiritual teaching, every form of politics, you know, is valid and useful to the extent that it really is democratic, that it guides each person to their own wise autonomy. Is it equal Mars and Venus? You know, equal masculine, feminine within us all? Is the trickster welcome? Can the truth be said without fear? Can people, you know, exchange and disagree in an expandingly feisty, fierce, compassionate, playful environment in a group or pack dynamic that encourages unique expression rather than suppresses it. Yes, we ladle it out, and no, we throw it back in for another round of bubbling away here. So it might be, you know, that part of what it is, our opportunity and our responsibility as humans is our capacity to borrow qualities of intelligence from the flora and fauna, from the plants and animals with whom we are kinned on this planet. You know, chamomile, the more you step on it, the better it grows. There's somebody's great mascot. You know, wolves, as we know, great leadership model. You know, that as wolf allies who have also been on this show, experts and so on, say from direct encounters, wolves, even if they are hunted, even though they must hunt, they play every 30 minutes, no matter what. And I want to also salute, we invite in our wise ancestors. I loved Vine Deloria as a great buddy, and the last time I saw him before he died, and we waved to his feisty, wonderful, tolerant, sharp, critical self, was at the Library of Congress where he was being honored. And Bob Goff, also friend of show, said, look at all these people. These are the great leaders of AIM. These are the great leaders of the American Indian Movement. And he said that they couldn't be here without a fist fight breaking out unless it was because of Vine. He is a feisty person who brings peace and accord. And one of the last things Vine said at that meeting that I treasure and got to talk with him about, because it's so him, he said, I meet many... Well, he said a couple of things. He said, I meet a lot of people who've self-mythologized. You know, so many young people who were raised by Grandmother Moose, you know, and they've invented it for status. And he goes, ugh. But at that meeting also, he said, I meet many young activists who are very, very serious about themselves. And he said, we who were effective great Native American indigenous leaders, we were very serious about the issues, but always playful among ourselves, right? That was a great thing to say, and a great human. So, yes, that playfulness, that model. And let me just bring up things that we've been honoring on the show, but bring them up again because they bear repeating at this powerful moment. We love the sky-earth story as guiding. We love that Saturn discipline is trining Uranus wildness. We love the earth mirroring of that by the mating of wolves and coyotes, creating a new species, the eastern coyote. Because wolves are very Saturn. I lived with Captain Moondog Wolfie, a part wolf hybrid, and also with Stella Coyote, a way too much, no, not really, but her father was a coyote. So I know these very different cultures, and then studying as well, and hanging out in the wild. Wolves, very Saturn. You know, again, we might have seen the great photo of wolves traveling single file, and they put the elder wolves and the infirm wolves in front to set the pace, and then every wolf has a job. Every wolf has a job. This is the non-mating, you know, female who will help raise the pups. This is the person's got a job. This is the job. This is the scout. And then away at the end are the alpha leaders. Beautiful. And then coyotes, very different. None of that. They'd be dashing in and out, nipping ankles and whatnot. Coyote, again, ingenious, highly adaptable, witty, trickster. So to have them mating, you know, says, well, then for us, you know, Josh was so emphasizing, yes, community, you know, unintentional communities, absolutely, as well as intentional. Just wherever you are, that's the community. And the wolves and coyotes, you know, mating with some dog DNA, so they're willing to cahoot with us, is a great model. May it be that we all have a wolf pack, right? May it be that we all have a wolf pack that supports our coyote unique individuality. May we have sufficient support. And I think that's part of the dynamic of radio and increasingly beautiful and wonderful, you know, Pacifica Radio, Visionary Activist Show, colleagues, and here we are going off to the conventions as well on behalf of everybody, both inside and outside. I'll definitely be at the July 24th, Clean Energy March. March in Philadelphia, crucial, and then weaving that to and fro and inviting in much into those conventions, you know, the spirit of water, the spirit of wolves. You know, it is not just humans, where all of life is on the line, and we want to call off this sociopathic loss of kinship war on life. Josh's film, certainly, which again is How to Let Go of the World and Love All Things That Climate Can't Change, certainly addresses water. But we also, we're in the realm of Big Mama now, in the Sun and Cancer realm of Big Mama Water. So there's only so much water on this planet, and we want to know how much is being taken out of the life-supporting cycle every moment by the ongoing crisis at Fukushima and other plants around the world, and the use of water to cool nuclear power plants, and that water will not support life in our conceivable living future. We know that fracking, you know, this obscene pollution of water, you know, which is also creating earthquakes, of course, and no place is more surrounded by fracking than Cleveland. We do like to invite, not count on, not hubris, not even causation, but go, oh, earthquake gods, it would be very witty to create a earthquake in Cleveland. Not harmful, not fatal. The Quicken Loan Conference Center in Cleveland. That would be very witty if that could just shake a little during the Republican convention, just for the fun of it. Just saying, that would be fun. We've seen these kinds of call and response. Again, we do not presume, just hubris. But we know cooperators are standing by and eager to be invited into cultural hijinks. So may it be so for all of us as agents of this, you know, and agents of Renaissance School of Educational Collective Healing. That's what we're calling this campaign. That's what we're calling politics, you know, to create the guiding story. Who brought what? Again, the Renaissance of ingenuity. And yes, you know, one of Josh's good lines for everybody to use, people say, oh, but we need the bridge of fracking to get us to, you know, energy renewal. That's like the state will wither away, right? He says it's not a bridge, it's a gangplank. You know, and then again, to be informed, you know, for all of us to be informed so that we're not hyper-reactive as well. We knew Syria, you know, before the Civil War, many complex factors, but 5 years of no rain. Did you know? Ocean acidification, destruction of corals, the implications, the forests of the West, ecosystem collapse. You know, there's the four horsemen of the apocalypse that Josh brings forth in his film, How to Let Go of the World and Love All Things That Climate Can't, all of that. So, you know, the Amazon. But remember the beautiful words at the Goldman Awards honoring Berta Cáceres, assassinated for her protecting the water that she loved. Berta did not die, she multiplied. And may it be so for all of us, you know, that everything, we be agents of revelation, that we hold all things accountable, and that we be irresistible inviters, you know, to everyone. Come on over from the thing that's going down. Come on over and find your soul and your dedication. Do meaningful work that you love, that's the primary way we initiate teens and veterans. Come on over. We need everybody. We love what we do, and we want you to love what you do and to contribute, and that's how the Renaissance rises. So thank you so much, team. Thank you, Bordoff in Berkeley. Thanks always to Timmy Olmsted in Washington, D.C. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. You can follow me on Twitter at StandUpCoyote or Facebook Coyote Network News. And we will reconvene next week with Stephen Dinan and his book on American democracy and the world in which, how to be ever more effective and the wedding of spirituality and politics. Woof, woof, woof. Thank you, team.
This is Mr. Earl Johnson, Jr., KPFA local election supervisor, with an important message. This summer, we will hold separate but simultaneous staff and listener elections for half the seats of the local station board. Please consider running for the board to ensure that the needs of the station in our community are met. Candidate nominations opens on June 1st and close June 30th. To run or vote in the upcoming election, you must be a member of KPFA by June 30th. For listeners, this means a donation of at least $25 between July 1st of last year and June 30th of this year, or 3 hours of volunteer station work, or a hardship waiver. To see the election calendar or download a nomination package, please visit election.pacifica.org or call 510-848-6767, extension 605.
It is 3 o'clock here at KPFA.